Michael Broadcorp is kind enough to join us once again. Of course, the girls are gone. We talked to him all about that. His fantastic book that he put out a while back. He's also been covering politics from the angle of the Republican Party in Minnesota. He has a pretty stunning breaking story that he's been covering this week, and he's kind enough today to join us to talk a little bit more about this story. Michael, thank you very much. I appreciate the time, my friend.
Maxim, thank you so much for the opportunity to be on. I appreciate it as always.
I mean, although we do have, I think, differing political beliefs, you and I think through things similarly. And what happened here is that the campaign caucus data from the Minnesota GOP came on down, which said there are 35,196 attendees. Pretty good. But there was only 17,801 people who voted. And I've done enough of these straw polls and caucuses to say, any sense, that's about half the people that were at the caucus voted. That's what you picked up on right away, too, correct?
Yes. I'm not a math major, but I think something is off.
Yes.
Yes. And so that's the problem. And so, you know, where this developed was on Saturday morning. You know, on February 1st, there were both political parties had, you know, precinct caucuses. And on the Republican side, there was a straw ballot, a preference ballot for the gubernatorial, on the gubernatorial side. As reported by the Secretary of State's office, based on information from the Republican Party of Minnesota, roughly 17,801 people voted in that straw ballot. But in the aftermath of precinct caucuses, both political parties, you know, prepare and distribute to campaigns the data of people that attended precinct caucuses that night. It's the base that both parties use that data as a basis to run their respective endorsement process and political convention. And as this data started to come from the state party headquarters on the Republican side, there was a clear indication from numerous campaigns that the data was off, that there was something wrong with the data. And since last Saturday, over the last week, the concerns of that data and other issues has metastasized into a number of substantive issues involving matters of election integrity, which you guys may have talked about on your radio before. There have been calls to audit the data, audit the election in some ways. That might be also something that you've heard Republicans talk about. And so what's happened is a lot of the rhetoric that the Republicans have engaged in since the 2020 election has now come full circle and is in some of the exact same phrases, some of the exact same languages being used inside the party apparatus.
You know, has there been any explanation? I mean, this is a pretty glaring problem here. Has the GOP leadership, have they come on out and said, okay, it looks like, you know, Phil accidentally hit a button twice or something like that? I mean, has there been any logical explanation on why these numbers are so off?
There's not been a logical explanation, a consistent logical explanation as to what's been going on. Let me say, both political parties use a large number of volunteers to help manage the caucus process. And so there's not been a clear, consistent answer as to what's gone on. There have been, you know, one particular campaign for governor, Neil Shaw's campaign for governor, was the first campaign to call for an audit of the data. And part of the reason they called for that audit was because based on information that they had and that they were distributing via a press release, a representative of a paid staffer with Paul Gazelka's campaign may have, according to the campaign, edited, altered, adjusted precinct caucus data in an area where she is also a party officer. And the data was potentially edited in a way or altered in a way that benefited Gazelka's campaign. That's a substantive allegation. What we're also hearing, what I've heard from the other campaigns, is that there are formatting issues, that there are the data is ripe with duplicate names. There is data from previous election cycles being added in. It's just a mess. And the problem that it presents, the practical problem that it represents for the party, for the Republican Party, is that the campaigns can't campaign. There are conventions that are starting inside the party. that are engaging. And so these campaigns are not able to effectively target these delegates, engage these delegates, and talk to these people because the party can't provide clean lists of people who these campaigns should target. And so, as I've described in other places, these campaigns are just kind of ships sitting in a harbor that can't do anything. They're just kind of stuck in dry dock because they can't campaign right now.
Has the GOP had problems like this in the past? The Minnesota GOP had problems like this in the past with the caucuses. Anything to this nature?
Nothing that I'm aware of. Now, there are every convention, there are credential issues that come about.
Sure.
It happens all. But nothing this systematic, nothing this widespread. There's never been. I mean, these allegations have risen so far that the Morrison County Sheriff's Office is now involved in reviewing some of this material. I can't speak to whether there's an investigation. All I know is that they were notified and were shared information by some activists up in that area about concerns that they have. I don't know that there's necessarily a law enforcement component to this story, but I've never seen this type of widespread problems before. And what it presents for Republicans is this, is that different for your listeners, the Democrats have a little bit of a different process than Republicans do. Both political parties endorse candidates statewide. But inside the Republican Party, there is much more an allegiance and adherence to the endorsed candidate. And so while on the DFL side, the candidates on the DFL side will sometimes bypass the endorsement. They will seek but not abide, and they'll run in the primary. I would argue, based on election results, that the DFL process is a heck of a lot more successful than the Republicans. But the truth of the matter is that Republican campaigns like to abide by the endorsement. What if this data doesn't get resolved quickly and within days? There is a distinct possibility that campaigns that had previously said they would abide by the endorsement will now run straight to the primary.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not a party apparatus as a party structure, as a political party. That's just not something that the Republicans are used to. And so it could be problematic.
And when we looked at this year's caucus, I thought the DFL was in trouble because they were doing it half online or mostly online and somewhat in person, and it was kind of a jumbled mess across the state. But it seems like they actually pulled that off, and the Minnesota GOP was mostly in person, and this is a big mess. When you go back to the allegations up in Morrison County, obviously that needs to be investigated, but this is, when you look at the discrepancy on these numbers, this has to be a lot more than just Morrison County. I mean, is there any hints that there's other counties or other locations where there might have been some shenanigans going on?
There's what seems to be the hot issue right now is up in Morrison County.
Okay.
The data is the numbers are so set across the spectrum. I mean, and so I think, you know, I don't think it's necessary. I don't think that I'm not aware of other areas of the state that have become such kind of hotbed areas like Morrison County, where law enforcement has been brought in and others, or at least law enforcement has been notified about stuff. The allegations that are going on in Morrison County are very, very substantive. There are some operational differences once again between the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. I learned, I think it was yesterday, that inside the DFL party, you cannot be a paid staffer of a campaign while simultaneously working or volunteering your time for a party unit. That might be something that the state party and the Republican side might need to look at.
Mm-hmm.
Because where this becomes a long-term problem is a lot of the rhetoric related to the 2020 election, audit the election, matters related to voter fraud, integrity, and all that type of stuff. Republicans are now channeling that energy inside their own party. David Hand was recently elected as party chairman. And one of the things that he campaigned on in running for party chair was that he was committed to auditing the source code of how the 2020 election was done in Minnesota. Now he has got those same issues inside the party,
mm-hmm.
and the party has not been as transparent and as open and as honest about the size and scope of the problem. Here's a just a, an updated number.
Okay.
There are over 200 delegates that are scheduled to be elected in the next 48 hours. And the state party has yet to provide complete lists for those geographic areas, nor have they provided the delegate allocations based on the new redistricting maps.
Wow.
And that's very problematic for these campaigns, because what it's doing is they have to basically stop campaigning. And there's the potential that they're going to waste resources, because if they send out mail to bad addresses, that's wasted mail. There has been some campaigns that have attempted to use some of this data and have had their list programs or their email programs shut down because the data is so bad. These internet companies and email companies are thinking that it's spam. And you can't adequately campaign. Imagine for your listeners that aren't as politically active, Matt, as you and I are or have been, imagine if Super Tuesday was happening and the presidential campaigns had no way of knowing who the actual voters are. That's kind of what's going on right now in a much smaller sense. It's creating tension and drama and infighting and allegations that people aren't playing fair. And that's not a good dynamic for the party to be at right now as they're trying to break the DFL's hold on winning statewide elections.
Reminds me of that debacle down in the Democrats in Iowa a few years back in 2020, and they still to this day, I don't think, know who won their caucus down there, and a lot of questions on whether they should be able to have that again. When you and if you're not following Michael Broadcorp on Twitter, you need to be following Michael Broadcorp on Twitter, because he's giving a lot of great insight out there, especially on the how things work on the Republican side. M. Broadcorp, and I'll link to it all a little bit later on. Plus, you're going to have a new website, it looks like, michaelbroadcorp.com. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes.
That's correct. Yeah, it'll be up here soon.
One of the things that you have repeatedly said is, where is the leadership of the Minnesota GOP? Even before the Jennifer Carnahan stuff, you were kind of saying, okay, something's not right. And what this whole thing seems to be exposing is there doesn't seem to be a real grasp of – you know, as you say, you've got delegates getting elected here in 48 hours. You've got a redistricting map that came out on Tuesday. I'm used to a Republican Party that has that information out by Tuesday afternoon. You're used to a Republican Party that a week after the caucus knows exactly what happened and where everything is at, and they've got things in place. It doesn't seem right now. The management structure within the Minnesota GOP is there to understand these things. And this is actually, as you said, kind of crippling the Minnesota GOP as they try to fight back against years of the DFL winning the statewide races.
Yes, and I think that comes from the fact that who is the party chair. The party chair is someone by the name of David Hand, who is not a tactician, who's not a strategist, who is not someone who has overseen and led a winning campaign operation. This is someone who lost, you know, was one of the few Republicans to lose when the Senate regained the majority in 2016, who lost his election. Part of the reason why David Hand was elected party chair was because a number of the party activists felt that there was a need to have somewhat of a less bombastic, more quiet party chairman. But the truth of the matter is they elected someone who came up through the ranks as a legislator, and legislators sometimes are not the best tacticians. They're not campaign strategists, and they're not campaign operatives sometimes. And so I think Han has been caught tremendously flat-footed on being ahead of this problem. There's also been, in the midst of it, there's been staff turnover. The political director who was at the state party left within the last week. I don't know if it was whether he left on his own terms or he left because of other reasons, but he has since left the party. And so there's problems here. And in an election year, you want candidates, if you're the head of a party, and you're the state party, you want your candidates firing on all pistons. You want them, their engines revved. You want their tires, you know, the tires filled, the gas tanks filled, ready to go and race. And what's happening right now is the MNGOP's cars don't have air in the tires. They don't have tanks on. They don't have gas in the tanks. And some of them don't. Some of these cars don't have steering wheels because the Republican Party of Minnesota has not provided them with the equipment tools that they need to run statewide. Mm. And that's what's so unfortunate. You know, I was talking with some, you know, as I consistently say to both Democrats and Republicans, what I'm an advocate for these days is having a vibrant two-party, at least two-party political system in the state, where Republicans and Democrats, at bare minimum, can compete in the marketplace of ideas with voters. And when the Republican Party is, you know, screwing up, messing up through unintentional or intentional mistakes, and there's this other type of tomfoolery going on, who really loses in this is the voters, because the voters are going to get denied an opportunity to have candidates discuss ideas in a good way. And it's unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. One final question for you on this, Michael, is that, okay, as you kind of pointed out, this there has been a welcoming of conspiracy theories, and especially with the talk of 2020 and elections, that is kind of a mainstream talking point within the Republican Party right now. As you look at this Republican caucus, it's one thing when you're talking about a general election where the other side won, but now you're seeing this infiltrate your own their own party and their own caucus system. Not only do I think that this spells some kind of doom for kind of the process, but as well, doesn't this give, and I'll say it, Dr. Scott Jensen, a person you've been concerned about as a Republican, is saying that I'm not sure if he's got the coattails to get big victories here. But considering he has been the candidate who has been kind of the poster child for conspiracy theories and the fringe right, doesn't this mistake kind of give him an advantage as you head into this process, saying, well, see, the whole system's broken. You might as well just go with me because I've been the one that's been saying this from the beginning.
You are absolutely correct. First and foremost, let me say without hesitation, I'm a Republican. I did not vote for Trump in 16 or 20. I am also a Republican who believes that Donald Trump lost the election fairly and squarely. I'm also a Republican who believes there's opportunities, as there are Democrats who believe, opportunities to make the election process more transparent and easier and all that stuff. But I do not believe in any way that Donald Trump lost the election because of fraud, malfeasance, or other things. He lost the election fairly and squarely. This brings this kind of hyperbolic, hyperpartisan, unintelligent rhetoric that's not based in fact, brings it right inside the party. The manner in which the party's handled this is going to elevate some of those same conspiracy theories related to the elections and stuff. But I also believe that in that process, what the party needs to do is be transparent and open. And I think they also need to do is recognize that every party makes mistakes. Every party has matters related to conventions and credentialing reports that sometimes get screwed up. What the party needs to figure out here is what mistakes were intentional and what mistakes were unintentional, and hold people accountable for that. But the rhetoric, you're hearing candidates calling for forensic audits. I mean, again, David Hand ran on, he wanted to do a forensic audit of the source code of the 2020 election. And here his own party now has issues related where other candidates are calling for forensic audits, calling for transparency issues. I absolutely believe that the press releases that are going out from these campaigns raising questions about the party's precinct caucuses are grounded in are well intentioned, and I believe there are problems that occurred on precinct caucus night and in the aftermath of the collection of the data. I believe there's much more of a factual basis for people to be asking for the party's precinct caucus data to be audited and to be examined, and for there to be a vetting of the party's precinct caucus data, more than I believe there ever is a need to do it related to the 2020 election. And if Republicans can reconcile that point, then I think this exercise might be good for them. But it's a mess, and it's a problem, and messes and problems are not what parties want in the aftermath of the election. The maps were released this week.
Yes.
It was the start of the race. The gun went off. If there was a start of the election cycle and everyone was lined up at the track meet, that gun went off, the starter pistol went off, and everyone was out the door. And at that time that was going on, when the maps were coming out, I mean, the party is not able to provide data, precinct caucus data allocation or other things. And so it's a problem in so many ways. But the rhetoric, I mean, someone could probably get their master's or PhD in political science in some ways by analyzing the contrast between what occurred in the 2020 election from a rhetorical standpoint and from the kind of the messaging to now what the Republicans are dealing with now inside the Republican Party. It's a real problem.
And it doesn't seem like there's going to be a clear path unless the leadership of the party take steps forward. There are a handful of political accounts I say are must follows. Michael Broadcorbs is one of them. You absolutely need to follow his Twitter account, M Broadcorb, BRODKORB. I'll link to that out there. Follow his Twitter feed and then keep an eye out, michaelbroadcorb.com. Do you know when that site officially launches?
Sometime hopefully later this month or early part of next month.
All right, michaelbroadcorb.com. I'll make sure I link to that as well when that goes live. Michael, thank you very much. As always, I appreciate the time, my friend.
Thank you, my friend. Have a great evening.
Take care. Michael Broadcorb. It's a pretty blockbuster story. We'll come back. We'll unpack that when we do return quickly. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.